Okay, this is an interview with Dr. Earl Trevathan, who was the first seasonal park ranger. Now, Dr. Trevathan, I'm going to start by just asking you some real basic questions, like when was your birthday? When is your birthday?
September 29, 1923.
And where were you born at?
Marlboro, North Carolina.
Marlboro?
Marlboro, T-A-R-B-O-R-O, okay. Marlboro, North Carolina, in Edgecombe County,
okay,
down east.
Okay, I've heard of that. Were your parents both born there as well?
Parents were born in Nash County and in Edgecombe County.
Okay. So you were the very first seasonal ranger on the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Right.
Where were you stationed at?
At that time, I had just been discharged from the United States Navy into World War II, and I had returned home to Pitt County. And had submitted an application for employment to Superintendent Sam Weems in Roanoke, Virginia, for employment on the Blue Ridge Parkway. I can tell you a little bit how that happened, if I may.
I would love to hear that.
All right. My father, I had just been married a couple of months by that time, or actually before I was married. My father-in-law was Paul R. Frank, who was superintendent of Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming. He was a longtime career Park Service person. And he had met Mr. Weems at one of the superintendent conferences that are held yearly. And he asks Sam if he knew about the availability of seasonal employment in the parks. And Sam had not heard of that position being open, but so my father-in-law explained that such a opening could be made available on the parkway, and he told him that his son-in-law might apply for such a job. Now, I think the reasoning at that time was anything the government could do to get veterans employed was an appealing a motive, and I think he was very happy because I was a veteran to put me on the force as a seasonal ranger. So I think that had something to do with this job becoming an opening and also my getting employed on the parkway.
So where did you go to your first day?
I reported to Asheville, which was a district office, and my district ranger was Mr. Granville Lyles, who was a Park Service career person, and years later he became superintendent of the parkway and Smoky Mountain National Park and some western parks also, so he had a long career in the Park Service, and he's the one I reported to directly. And since it was kind of a new position, and since the travel on the parkway right after the war was still quite low, lack of gasoline and other reasons, there was not a lot of tourists. My major jobs at that time was marking boundary lines or repainting flashings and identifying old flashings along the property right-of-ways, especially around the Asheville area and all the way up to Craggy Gardens. So during the week, doing jobs like that and spending some time on the parkway, especially during the weekends where we did have more tourists, was what took most of my time during that first summer. I was given a 1938 green Chevrolet pickup truck, and I had a brand new pretty uniform, which the Park Service had told me where to order from a uniform company. I guess I paid for it myself. And I was also supplied with a .45 caliber pistol. I wasn't sure what that was for, but I never had to use it, but I guess that was, in law enforcement, one of the things that a ranger would be given to use for whatever reason. I'm not sure.
Were you given any training in use of the pistol?
No training. Matter of fact, it was a rather hard item to fire because it had such a kick on it. I did take it out one time to see if I knew how to shoot it, but there was never any threat on my life or any need to use it, so I guess it was just for symbolic reasons in law enforcement.
How many years were you a seasonal ranger?
Three summers. The second two summers were between my first and second years in medical school, And it worked out real well getting out of school end of May and being able to work on until the 1st of September. I usually reported first week in June and left the Parkway in late August, just at the time the early leaves were beginning to show autumn colors, I can remember.
Right. What years were these that you were a seasonal ranger?
46, 47, and 48.
Did you stay in Asheville all three seasons?
No, the first year was in the Asheville area. My district was from Balsam Gap to the French Broad River, and that section of the parkway from one of these county roads leading up to Craggy Gardens on about 20 miles of the parkway that were open at that time. I believe they were unpaved. It was a gravel road. Was a district I patrolled, and there were right many tourists going up at that time to Craggy Gardens to see the beautiful rhododendron up in that area. Mm-hmm. And because of the high altitude, because it was so remote and beautiful around the Asheville watershed, we had right much traffic along there, especially during the weekends. My second summer, I was living in Black Mountain, and I went around to Marion and up to Buck Creek Gap, and I did the district from Balsam Gap all the way back to Grandfather Mountain. And in those days, going up that long haul to Ridgecrest with about 132 switchbacks was a trying trip as compared to today with that interstate easy climb up the mountain.
Yeah, I bet so. Did you see other seasonal rangers begin?
Did what?
Were there other seasonal rangers beside you?
I think the three summers I was a seasonal ranger, I was the only one that was doing seasonal work. I don't know, the budgets were quite limited, I guess, but I do not recall a seasonal ranger doing the same job I was doing further up north on the parkway. And I don't know when other rangers came aboard, but I'm sure it was later, and even maybe after I finished my last year there,
right.
My last summer there.
Was the conscientious objector camp at Buck Creek Gap still working while you were there? Do you remember anything about that?
I don't remember anything about it. It seemed like I had heard of it, but I'm not sure about it.
Okay.
Where it was or anything, I guess over on the Salto River somewhere.
Right. Was Crabtree Meadows campground and picnic area built when you were working?
The campground was open. The fireplaces and the picnic tables were there. There was no supervision, no registration. And I noted in recalling that there was very little use. I would go through in the late evening to see if we had campers and would occasionally find three or four campsites in use. But it never was used very heavily during the three summers I was there. I would visit with people there and see if they were behaving and making sure there was no alcohol being used. I think that was one thing we were concerned about, and handle their fires properly. And I'd always tell them about the beautiful hike down to Crabtree Falls and that it was a trip worth taking if they could physically do it, because
right.
That was such a beautiful falls that very few people knew about, and I thought it was a great experience.
Right, it still is.
Yeah.
Did you, what about Linville Falls? I don't believe that area was developed yet, but did y'all interpret the falls at all?
We would tell them about the beautiful trip down there and that there were overlooks where they could see the falls, and I'd often send people down that way. At that time, it was not part of the parkway, and scout troops would go in there for their hiking and overnighting experiences, and I would often suggest that as a site for people who wanted to see something really spectacular. And I went down in the falls on several occasions fishing, and it was very rough and very much a wilderness and quite a wonderful area to visit, but that wasn't part of my recommendations for most people.
Right. The Linville River Bridge, it was built by then, wasn't it?
Yes.
Were people at all interested in looking at it? I know it's one of the most beautiful pieces of work on the parkway, I believe.
Yes. I think the arches and the bridge there was spectacular for photographing and for adding so much impressive sculpture or features of the parkway. And I always enjoyed that section up around Linville anyway.
What was your first memory of the parkway?
Well, of course, the high altitude and the overlooks that gave you access to seeing the high mountains, and coming up in the mountains in spring, watching the parade of colors, beginning with the spring dogwood, and then the Turk's cat lily was a favorite along the parkway, and people would often stop and ask what that was, the beautiful orange lily with spots on it.
Right.
And then the laurel would come, and then the rhododendron, and then it was just a procession of color because of the lower altitudes. In late May, you would have all the color, and then it would continue all up into mid-June, where crowning at the with the blooms up at Craggy Gardens in early June. So they were our first impressions of just the beauty of the right-of-way through the mountains, and then overlooking the valleys, the old farming areas, the small towns, and so forth. There was quite a bit of wildlife up in the high country in those days because the traffic didn't, because in the evening you'd always see deer on the road, and you'd always, once during the week, you'd see a rattlesnake making his trek across the highway up in the high country. And my second summer, I picked up two or three of those and put them in a cage that was built at one of the maintenance sites. And occasionally I'd take a couple of visitors over there to see a rattlesnake, and they thought that was extraordinary. I don't know whether that's part of parkway policy. I imagine it is now, but anyway, it was one thing that I did enjoy doing. Those days. Occasionally you would see a bear, especially at night, cruising the parkway or coming home from other duties up that way.
Do you ever remember seeing any mountain lions?
Mountain what?
Mountain lions or cougars?
No. No, never did see a cougar or a bobcat. Maybe I saw a bobcat, but never a mountain lion or anything like that. Used to hear about them, and I used to visit with an old bear hunter at going up the Mount Mitchell Road. I can't think of his name now, but everybody knew Tom somebody, and listened to bear stories. That was a favorite hunting activity in the mountains in those days. It was bear dogs chasing bear across the parkway right away and all that. There was no way of stopping it. There was no problem, as far as I know.
Did you get to know very many of the local people while you were there?
Mostly the local people who worked on the parkway did physical work and picked up trash and things like that. I got to know them, and but not any much of the neighborhood areas. I did have some curiosity about moonshining, and that was an interesting thing in those days because late in the evening or at night you could hear them chopping wood along the parkway right away. They would cut up dead trees to fire stills to produce moonshine whiskey. And, of course, working at night, you wouldn't see it. There wouldn't be any smoke problems, so they could go ahead and distill the mash and create the whiskey. And I would stop and listen to them cut wood down there, and I could actually hear them talk from the parkway. And one daytime, I went down to explore an area and found a large still with 8 or 10 barrels of moonshine. I took pictures of it and just sort of looked the area over and came back out. And later I mentioned that to Ranger Granville Lyles. And he didn't say anything at the time, but later he got me aside and pointed out the risk of doing such a thing is that a risk to the parkway. He said if locals who feared the government intruders knew that you were watching their operation or any danger being reported, that they had a mechanism of retaliation. They just set the woods on fire and burn up a strip of the parkway if they wanted to. So that little warning was enough, and I never went back to seek out moonshining near the parkway right away, which was the business of revenueers and others in law enforcement, and not any business of ours. So, but anyway, I had some good pictures of an active still, but only one time.
Right. Do you remember any actual cases of moonshiners burning the forest down while you were there?
I never saw evidence of that, but it was a good warning that it could happen.
Right. I've heard similar.
I had heard of that, but I didn't see scars or anything that, well, maybe so. Maybe it had occurred in the past, because certainly that was the first thing he wanted to tell me.
Right.
Aside from whatever risk it might have been to me to be in that area.
I read an interview of Sam Weems, and that was one of his hardest things, was getting land from people who were moonshiners, because they were so afraid that he was like a revenuer, and they tried so hard not to get him to go into some parts of their woods just because of the stills.
Yeah, well, especially if you had a ranger cap on, a ranger uniform, which I wore, and I could see the lack of wisdom in going into that particular area and then being seen as a federal officer, so to speak, and what a risk that might be to me and to the parkway too. And it just wasn't our business, since they weren't usually on the parkway right away, I guess, in their operations. But it was a busy industry up in the coves of the mountains in the 1940s.
As a seasonal ranger, was part of your job to interpret the parkway or to do naturalist programs and such?
Yes, we did some of that. I never received any instructions and instructive programs or informative programs like that, but I built a little program of my own, as I would memorize all of the mountain peaks and the elevation, which was a frequent question asked at overlooks. Stopping at an overlook where there might have been 8 or 10 people standing around taking pictures and looking was a perfect place to meet the public, and they always would come up and say, "Hey, Ranger, what's the name of that mountain over there and how high it was?" So I could always provide that information. They would often ask how to get to Asheville, or how far was it. They would often ask where could they spend the night, where there were tourist homes. I say tourist homes because that was just about before motel days, and most of the people stayed in tourist homes when they were traveling and visiting our mountains during the mid-40s. I did a lot of aid in people, not stranded, but cars breaking down and getting too hot, and I could tell them where water was, and I'll loan them a bucket to go dip water out of a stream to come back and pour in radiators, because you would see them pull off the side of the road with the hood of the car up and steam just pouring out after a long climb from Buck Creek Gap trying to get to Mount Mitchell.
Right.
And I could tell them how far they could coast without gasoline coming from Mount Mitchell to Buck Creek Gap and all the way down to Spruce Pines or all the way down to Marion to get gas. And I think from Balsam Gap to Buck Creek Gap, there's only one area where you couldn't coast all the way, where there is a rise in the road. And at that point, I could take my truck and push them over the rise, and they could go all the way to get gasoline. I don't know why people would be running out of gas in the mountains, but they did.
And that still goes on today.
I guess so.
It does. That's a long strip between Asheville and Spruce Pine.
Yeah.
Can you think of the worst thing that happened to you while you were on the parkway?
The worst thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can think of a near accident that nearly involved me, that I hadn't forgotten to this day because it was so frightening. But they had a lot of fire schools in those days. I guess you still do.
Right, we still do. Went through it this year.
It is a very much a part of the ranger's work. Well, at one of the maintenance areas, they had a fire truck there, and we're rehearsing things and how to get the pumper on the truck going. And the hose was wrapped, as it is, around a drum, and someone turned the water on, the pressure into the wrapped hose, and that started the drum spinning, and the end of the hose extended and flipped around the truck like a whiplash. And the nozzle on that hose would have crushed an automobile nearly. Well, that thing shot up in the midair and made a quick flip over and hit the ground in about 5 feet of where I was standing. And it startled everybody that accident was allowed to happen. And it frightened me being so near it. And I've never forgotten that, because I guess that's what you say, coming close to a disaster. I don't know what would have happened if it hit me on the head, but right. I'm sure that'd have been the end of it.
Mm-hmm, I think so too.
But otherwise, there were no accidents and no lost people or no tragedies that I can think of that I was involved in. A lot of things would happen. I think we'd have a plane crash or two in the area, and we could stand on the parkway with field glasses and see where a plane had crashed very close to the right-of-way or somewhere up along in there, and a death would be associated with it, but it was only incidental to the parkway at that time. I don't remember being involved in any personal misfortunes or tragedies.
What was Granville Lyles like?
He was one of the nicest guys, a real mountain person, sharp, great energy. He was sort of a type A personality. He had great ability to communicate, especially with mountain people, and knew what actions ought to be taken to resolve conflicts and things like that, because he knew the people. And he was a very handsome man, and I think the persona of a park ranger. And his greatest regret and greatest worry was the fact that he never obtained a college education. I think he came right into the Park Service as a young boy out of high school before the war, and I don't know whether he ever served in the military or not, but he was working when I was there. And he thought that would always retard his advancement, and I felt surely he had a great career in the Park Service, but he felt it would limit his advancement because of the lack of a formal education. Again, he represented a person who was well-educated without formal education, and I think he proved that because he went on to the West Coast to superintend the park out there, and he again came back to the parkway as superintendent and the Smoky Mountains as superintendent. So I think he had an excellent career, and even without formal education.
Right. Were there any other employees that stood out to you?
Well, Chief Ranger out of Roanoke was Bernard Campbell. He stood out, as many of them did, because they took such a personal interest in me and my wife Ruth, and wanted to keep up with us in our future academic careers in medical school and all that, and we communicated for a few years at Christmas anyway. Bernie Campbell went on, I've forgotten where, but I think he did finally superintend the park somewhere, a small park. I'm not sure he went on to help open up the Everglades. One other ranger I remember that I liked very much, whom I can't remember, went down there to work in the Everglades, and that was his career. There weren't many ranges, about 8 or 10 of us, and they were scattered all up the parkway, so we didn't get to see them a lot. I would often see Mr. Campbell and Mr. Weems on the parkway, because they would make their rounds coming south to meet probably with community leaders or business people or county officials and things like that, because I think that's where they had most of their work assignments, and I'd see them on the parkway and have a social visit there for a few minutes.
What was Mr. Weems like?
Mr. Weems, rather small stature, and he was along in years. He wasn't a young man at that time, and very friendly. He reminded me more of a businessman, intellectual person, good CEO type. He certainly didn't remind me of a man of the wilderness or a man of the mountains or anything.
Right.
But he apparently did a good job because he stayed there all of his career. I think he was asked to go to other parks but refused.
Right.
I don't know whether that's truth or rumor.
Eventually, he ended up in Australia helping to design their national parks.
Oh, he did have some ability, didn't he?
But he spent a long time here on the Parkway.
Yeah.
Have you been back to the Parkway often?
At Parkway office?
Have you been to the back to the Parkway often?
Oh often, yes. Oh, sure. With family, with the children camping, with grandchildren. Because I knew so many side areas to visit and so many good fishing streams and where I thought the best campsites were. And that always served me well when I was up there with my family in later years. And even as of last September with grandchildren up in Rocky Knob and again telling them about the old days.
Right.
And so I've been a great continuing supporter of the Parkway. I've given a lot of programs on the Parkway in Rotary clubs and things like that because I keep quite a file of information and I'm a publicist for the Parkway.
What is the favorite story that you tell your grandchildren?
Favorite story?
Uh-huh.
Oh, about the fishing streams and about hiking this particular area and running into bear or wildlife and just the things I did during that time. And again, about their parents who were up there as infants.
Right.
My first daughter was brought up there when she was 2 weeks old, and each two summers later there was a son, and so they were there as babies, and then later as little children. I've got pictures of them when they were little school children along the Parkway with signs in the background and things like that.
Well, what changes have you noticed over the years?
Changes that have concerned me most is what's concerning the Parkway, and that's the crowding of development.
Right.
My idea, we'd see A-frames, cottages sitting right up against the Parkway, and I see a tremendous number of access roads, which seem to be a lot more than we had in later days. And where they were right-of-ways that could be opened up, or had to be opened up in the future to accommodate development areas, things like that, I don't know. The other change is the increased in use because the Parkway has a great deal of traffic on it now and much more than I saw in the early days. The wonderful visiting centers now with active staff on hand and such facilities that were not necessarily needed in the early days but certainly are now, like grocery canteens or shopping areas where you can buy goods, camping goods, and visiting centers, and ranger information programs, naturalist programs, the expansion of many of the campgrounds, which were part of accommodating a growing number of visitors, I'm sure. So there are a lot of things that are different. Yes.
Mm. Did you ever expect to see the Linco Viaduct built around Grandfather Mountain?
No, I didn't, and that was a very great concern even in the 40s. Parkway was easy to move down from up north all the way down to Grandfather Mountain. Then you would hit the Grandfather Mountain, all the way down to Mount Mitchell, but when you'd hit the Grandfather Mountain area, a narrow little switchback, dangerous road, slow traffic way down and back traffic up at times was a real, real problem. And we were struggling then to find out when and if the Parkway would ever get completed around that area. we knew the right-of-way had been marked at a couple of places and had already been flashed on trees, so we knew where it was to go, but we were facing the objections of a very powerful individual in Hugh Morton. He had great state support contacts and was a man of some clout in the state, even in those early days. And he was determined what he wasn't going to allow to happen, and whereas most others had to submit to the government's, the state's right-of-way purchase, they left Hugh alone, so he was treated as a separate individual. I guess in a way that's what's called some discrimination. But apparently what he had in mind was something like the viaduct that's been done, and even though it was 40 years late in coming, and even though it was very expensive, I'm glad to see it happen the way it did.
Right, I do too.
The mountain is not scarred like he thought it would be, and I guess the planners in those early days never thought we could ever have the funds to do what has been done, and it took a stubborn man to hold out for it.
Well, that's true.
Their blankets and cut their watermelons and have a big dinner right on the parkway, any on the shoulders anywhere they wanted to, and I used to dread that because so many times when they folded up to steal away, they'd leave the watermelons and the trash right there, and I'd have to pick it up and put it in the back of my truck where I carried a can for litter. And I had a stick with a nail point in the end of it, and I picked up tons of trash during all those 3 summers and helped keep that park clean. And I think now it's become part of our culture to work that way, and we don't see that much littering going on. But from that time on, I've always had a sort of a horror of litter and obsessed with getting it cleaned up. And even today, I work with the Sierra Club to clean up the highways around here in the pickup highway cleanup project, which North Carolina sponsors. And I'm sure I got my start on the parkway.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think we have a more informed public, and they know that facilities are available for camp, for picnic sites and things like that. And that allows for a much more beautiful parkway.
I agree with that. I thank you for spending the time doing this with me. I think this will be real valuable to everybody.
I hope so. It's been fun.